leftout.info, I-N-F-O. So check out the website. Notes for all of the topics that we cover are there, including links to our sources and other information.
Plus MP3s of programs from preceding programs.
Right. The other announcement I wanted to make is that we're going to be showing the movie called Uncovered, The Whole Truth About the Iraq War, which was produced by MoveOn.org. And we'll be showing that movie on campus in McConomy Auditorium in CMU's University Center on Tuesday, March 2nd at 8 p.m. That's 2 weeks from today. And that's the same day. That's the same day we'll be having our next Left Out program, and it'll be at 8 o'clock in McConomy Auditorium. And that movie is it's really impressive because of the high quality of the consultants and the people who are the CIA agents and so on, who unanimously were outraged by the approach to the war. And it's very clear when you watch them talking how. How you know what they felt about what was going on with the intelligence.
Right. I watched it last week, and I think it's a very, very impressive documentary and features quite a number of people who were inside and outside of the government, who had many of whom had access to a lot of information that we wouldn't otherwise have access to. So I recommend you go. So the first topic we wanted to discuss today was a longstanding issue with a reporter for The New York Times named Judith Miller. I'll have to give you a little bit of background on this to let you know where we're coming from, and then we'll go into the story and the most recent developments. So Judith Miller, as I said, is a reporter for The New York Times, who is by and large responsible for the articles, the headline articles, front page, above the fold articles that were running in The New York Times starting around September of 2003. That were really instrumental in selling the war to the American public at large and even to the rest
of
the world.
No, September of 2002, right?
2002.
The war took place in 2003. Right?
Yes, I'm off by 1 year there. Right, exactly. September 2002, and then leading up to the war in 2003. And her articles, there was a number of characteristics of her articles that I and some of our friends here have noticed even while they were being written when they were first published. They were generally touting the Pentagon line just to the letter, right on time, you know, on time and on message in each case. The articles were characterized by being extremely lightly sourced. Most of the sources were high administration officials or people whose identity she would not disclose, or there were occasionally some pseudonyms that were used generally for Iraqi informers, or so she says, who are reporting on a number of issues that were part of the war hysteria, in particular the claims that Iraq was, you know, building a nuclear weapon that they were going to launch against the United States at any moment, and so on. And the wars also articles about their acquiring various forms of biological weapons and so on and so on. And immediately after the war, she was also instrumental in passing along propaganda about, oh, we're going to find weapons at any moment. We frequently saw breathless headlines saying that, oh, we finally found the smoking gun. You know, the news will be out imminently, and then nothing ever appears. So if there's one thing that has characterized Judith Miller's reporting in that time, is that it's all largely false. Everything that she claimed is completely bogus. So we were looking into this in the run-up to the war in the winter of 2002, 2003, in the early spring, trying to put together some kind of story to find out, you know, just who is this person and why is this happening. And there were a number of things that we discovered, a number of things that puzzled me and about the whole thing. So one of the points was that I kept asking myself, why is it that the New York Times would be publishing this? I mean, why is the New York Times serving as a conduit for the Pentagon in this issue? And because that was certainly my hypothesis, and as I'll explain a little later, I think there's ever more reason to believe this as time goes on. And then, coincidentally, what happened was the Jason Blair story broke. And some of you may remember from last winter that there was a huge scandal at the New York Times. When they reported that one of their reporters had been for a period of, well, I think it may have been as long as a year.
At least a year, yeah.
Was systematically falsifying his stories. We needn't go into the details here, but generally he was filing reports from places that he had never been, including he was one of the people who was filing reports, background reports about the Jessica Lynch story, the widely hyped story of the of the female Rambo who was supposedly emptied her weapon until her gun melted and, you know, killed a zillion Iraqis and was stabbed and shot and who knows what else. None of which turned out to be true, but that didn't matter because it served its purpose at the time. Anyway, Jason Blair was reporting on her family background, and it emerged that he had never actually even been to where she lived in West Virginia, and then, well, there was a long string. He was also one of the main New York Times reporters covering the Washington D.C. area sniper case that had happened. And also those were also fabricated. Anyway, the point of bringing up the Blair issue is that for me this was the linchpin, because what I realized from reading a very lengthy analysis of the situation that New York Times published, and by the way, subsequently led to the resignation of their managing editor and editor-in-chief. There's Howell Raines, and I've forgotten the managing editor's name at the moment, resigned in the wake of all of this. The point is that what came out in this story was that the New York Times reporters are absolutely unsupervised. And so it was completely possible for this guy to hang out in Brooklyn and file stories from Maryland and West Virginia and well, wherever he'd like, and not get caught for the longest time because there was no, for example, correlation between his travel records, for example, and filing for travel reimbursement and the stories he was filing or any tracking that how could he have been, you know, both in D.C. and in West Virginia on the same day and filing these reports. Anyway, the point being, there was a really very completely unsupervised. And so for me, this was the thing that convinced me that now I could see how it was that Judith Miller was doing this. Okay, so that's like part of the story. So, but the real issue is to sort of try to understand a little bit the motives and an explanation for how this could have come about. So we can see that I can see that the New York Times is, well, I don't have to postulate any complicity by the New York Times. I can just postulate neglect. And that's enough to explain this part, how these stories got published. But the other thing is that there's a lot to look into about who her connections are and how this comes about. So for quite a long time, and I'll go into some of those in a moment, but for quite a long time, we couldn't get any traction with this story. I mean, many, many people, including me, wrote to the New York Times to complain about these articles, and, you know, just nothing would happen. There was reporting, for example, in The Guardian in the U.K., but there was no reporting. I read the New York Times every day. I read the letters to the editor every day. I've never once seen a letter to the editor about Miller's reporting. Maybe there were some, but I certainly have never seen any. So finally, at long last, is the way I feel about it, there was an article in the New York Review of Books and also a program segment on Democracy Now! Last week. Danny, what day was that?
I think it was last week. Wednesday, probably.
Yeah, Democracy Now! Was covering this story. And there's an article written by Michael Massing in the New York Review of Books in the current edition, and I dated February 26th. So I highly recommend that you read this story because it provides a lot of information about what has been going on, and in particular about Judith Miller. So it's a very lengthy story. There's an enormous amount of information here. But over the last year, there has been, a few things happened. You may recall Jack Schaefer of the Washington Post. I would say it's nearly a year ago or thereabouts.
Is he in the Washington Post or the Slate or both?
Oh, I think he writes for the Washington Post, and I don't remember whether this particular thing appeared in Slate or the Washington Post, which was that someone in the New York Times leaked email between her and the bureau chief in Iraq. They had some kind of disagreement, which from the sound of it was like the sort of thing that reporters get into disagreements with their bureau chiefs. It seems sort of normal. But the email that was leaked, one of the points that Judith Miller made, the issue had to do with the handling of Ahmad Kalabi. And you may know Ahmad Kalabi was the the international fraud, the convict who was convicted of a major bank fraud in Jordan, has been on the lam there for decades, and who was being groomed by the Pentagon to be the to take over in Iraq.
He's an Iraqi exile, the head of the Iraqi National Congress.
So right? Judith Miller admitted in this email that that Ahmad Kalabi has been the source for most of their headline stories on Iraq in the last year, which was really quite a revelation because that was entirely consistent with our observations and our suppositions. So this point comes out in Massing's article, and I think it's worth going into there. Reading this in detail because it's really, you know, very, very interesting about it. One thing, though, that it seems to me that Massing doesn't go far enough. And so even though this is, I'm reading it on the web, so I can't really tell you how many pages it is, but it probably runs 20 pages or something. It's really very lengthy. One of the things he doesn't go into, though, is a bit of background about Judith Miller that we've uncovered ourselves. And that's her connections with an organization called Benador Associates. And this is also another thing to that's interesting to look into. Benador, putting it briefly, Benador Associates is a public relations firm that's run by a woman named Eliana Benador, who I believe is a Peruvian, run in New York. And it's a organization that's dedicated to promoting the interests and ideas of what the people who are now known as the neocons within the government. So if you look on the Benador Associates webpage, you know, you'll see that right now they admit to a number of members in their organization, like people like James Woolsey, people like Richard Pearl, Kenneth Edelman, if I remember correctly, Laurie Mairoli, who is a co-author of a book on Iraq with Judith Miller, and amongst all of these other people, and Judith Miller herself. And so what you realize is that, you know, that there is a connection here, and the connection is obviously Judith Miller has close associations and close affiliations with all of these people who you can look for yourself to see them. And interestingly enough, in a little bit of a twist, Judith Miller's name was on the masthead at Benador Associates as one of the people that they were promoting, one of the people in their stable. Up until around November of 2002, when it disappeared. But thankfully, there's something called archive.org, which archives the web, and we can show that she was listed there.
Bob, can we put that on the website, a link to that?
We can probably look that up. We should do that. Archive.org is very useful for digging up information. Anyway, I think my only point here is simply to say that there's a clear paths. You can see how this goes about. The purpose of Benador Associates was to promote the war and to promote the interests of the neocon elements in the government for their war policies in the Middle East, of which Iraq is really just the first step. And Judith Miller is one of the people associated with Benador. Also, Judith Miller is associated with the Richard Pipes' organization, the Middle East Forum, also a very right-wing pro-war organization, the right-wing think tank. So there's another association. And in fact, Judith Miller reviewed a book by Richard Pipes in the New York Times Book Review without revealing her associations with the Middle East Forum. So the whole thing stinks, putting it mildly. And it's just interesting to point out anyway that Michael Massing has finally blown up this story, or begun to blow up this story, to make people realize that not only were they lied to by our politicians, but even sources that I would say many people had come to trust, like reporters for the New York Times, have just been part of the propaganda machine, who have been promoting all of the nonsense that we've been fed, starting in the summer, late summer of 2002, and really continuing up to this day.
I have a couple of comments about that story as well. There was the notion that the New York Times is a liberal newspaper, and it's certainly a trusted newspaper, whether it's liberal or not, that's something else. That allowed the other news organizations, when they saw articles by Judith Miller touting the weapons of mass destruction and other things, that gave them a lot of credibility to then say, to trumpet that story, like Fox News or CNN or other organizations would then trumpet this story as, you know, absolutely reliable and proving the
liberal media,
even the liberal media is has now come around and you know has verified that yes, you know, Iraq is a terrible, terrible, you know, threat to the United States. There was one example that kind of sticks in my mind. It was a story that she did shortly after the invasion, I think, where there was a person, some sort of shady person that she alludes to as told to her by the U.S. military. It was an Iraqi scientist, but she didn't get to interview him directly, but she was told by the military that he told them that they destroyed a big stockpile of weapons right before the invasion. And this was very odd, but it was totally uncorroborated by any other information. It was just, if you read the headline, they wrote a headline that allowed them to make these bold claims about weapons destroyed right before the invasion. But then if you read the article, it was so lame. The actual information was so lame that why would they even run with that article? It was ludicrous, the weakness of that information. So,
Well, certainly, certainly did seem to me that Judith Miller was functioning as a plant. Of course, we don't really know. Was Judith Miller merely played for a fool? I mean, was she, you know, firmly believed that she had good inside information and was reporting it in good faith, or was she really complicit in being an instrument of propaganda? Well, we'll never know that, and I don't claim that I know which that is either. But it's certainly the case that there are connections that are there, and the story has consistently been reproducing the Pentagon's line without any particular analysis or investigation. I think really that's my criticism, is that a reporter's job should be to, you know, investigate, like, does this story hold any water? Does it make any sense? And since the most of these stories were so risibly false, I mean, just, you know, completely ridiculous right on the face of it at the time that they were promulgated, I find it hard to believe that someone in that position wouldn't be smart enough to figure this out. But
do you think the New York Times is going to do any kind of internal investigation or response to the article by Manning?
Well, with Manning, that's a good question. One thing, that's a very good point. One thing that the leaked email that Jack Schaefer reported indicates is that someone in the New York Times was trying to sort of get a little payback, because somehow that information became public. So one wonders, and I think, is it in Hamming's article, his own article, or where else was I reading, that there's a general, some people are of the opinion that a number of reporters in the New York Times are quite dissatisfied or very discontented about this particular affair, amongst others, and want something to be done about it. But so far, the New York Times, to my knowledge, has been completely silent on the issue.
Why don't we take a break, and you can call us up at 412-621-9728. We'll be talking about longwall mining and other things as well.